From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Fairfax, California.
Glen Park.
Fillmore.
I'm from San Jose.
I'm from the Intermission.
UCCC World.
East Oakland.
Coming up, landlords in San Francisco say the gig's not as easy as you might think.
And if I had a choice again, knowing that this was going to happen, that I would get stuck with people that I can't remove from a building, I wouldn't have done it.
And we all know something about rent control, but maybe not as much as we thought.
Right. Good question, because it's always one of the bigger ones. It's what's rent controlled and what's not.
Then losing your home to an eviction is hard, but enforcing that order is even harder than you might imagine.
You have to figure out what underlying issues do they have. Are they being, you know, evicted for what reason? Are they being evicted because they're a nuisance? Or is it basically they lost their job and now they can't make the payment?
Renting in a hot housing market coming up on Cross Currents. Here on Cross Currents, we've featured ongoing coverage of San Francisco's housing crisis. We reported on the Ellis Act.
People should know what the Ellis Act is, that it's a myth, that there's a protected class.
On squatters making use of abandoned homes.
And that's when they finally were just like, enough's enough, you're going to jail.
And we've been in the middle of protests from angry residents.
This city is changing into a place where families are not welcome, where elders are not welcome, where artists are not welcome, where workers are not welcome.
Come on now.
Sick.
Many stories are told from the renter's perspective, but today we're going to focus on some of the other people who figure into the issue. In our first story, we're going to hear from another essential part of the housing equation, the landlords. KALW's Liz Pfeffer brings us a bit of their perspective on today's expensive rental market.
When I first set out to do a story on San Francisco landlords, I realized that they're sort of hard to come by. Most of the city's population are renters, but I found one place where a lot of landlords gather, Fort Mason Center in the Presidio. This is where real estate attorney Daniel Bornstein coaches building owners and potential investors on the nuances of the rent ordinance. These are the rules that San Francisco landlords have to live by.
Thank you.
You want to make life easy for yourself? Only look for properties that were built after 1979. I don't care if it's a duplex, a triplex, a single family home, a condominium unit. If the property certificate of occupancy was issued after what date? June. No rent control.
There are 60 people in the audience. A lot of them are senior citizens. Many are Asian. It's an even mix of men and women. They ask questions like, what are the rules for renting parking spaces to non-tenants? Can I evict a unit for my grandson to move into? And I know someone is illegally subletting. Help.
In San Francisco, owners who are doing it by themselves are the most vulnerable for having made mistakes and potentially being subject to significant litigation and liability expenses.
Bornstein says he offers these free talks as a public service to the community. He's been doing them for the last 15 years.
And we are going to be around for another 30 to 40 years, I hope. They're
really popular. Bornstein has a big presence on social media, and sometimes 200 people show up to hear him talk.
My goal is to educate people to be able to make good decisions about their real estate investments and also to ensure compliance with the law. Because oftentimes at the seminars I'm giving, it's the first time people are finally understanding the rules and regulations of the ordinance.
Like small property owner Rebecca Wang.
Yeah, he's great. He's like he said, he doesn't like to go to court and fight. He just wants to make sure your problem is solved and save your money, both side money too.
So I will work very hard and even overpay to do a buyout of a tenancy rather than do two no-fault evictions on the property.
There's a lot to take into consideration when making plans for your property. Landlords see the skyrocketing rents and don't think it's fair that their building is less valuable because it's occupied by long-term tenants.
I have people come into my office who feel victimized by regulations.
That's fueling a spike in owner move-ins and Ellis Act evictions in the city, the kind where landlords are allowed to get rid of all their tenants when they take their building off the rental market.
And that's unfortunate because I think in the end it terrorizes the community and puts the community in a position where compromise isn't the fundamental goal.
It makes sense, then, that most of the landlords I try to speak with are on edge. Nobody wants to say anything on air that could be used against them.
So I'm from KLW, and I'm here because I'm doing a story about what it's like to be a landlord in San Francisco. Are you a landlord?
Nothing. All I got was a leave me alone, or I'll talk to you off the record, but I won't tell you my name. Finally, though, somebody felt sorry for me.
My name is Terry Hurley, and I've lived in this city all my life, and my family has lived in this city all their life.
Hurley's 70. He's owned a three-unit building in the Haight for more than 40 years. He lives in one of the flats and rents out the others.
There was a period of time when I was just what you might call hippie landlord. People moved in. I let them move in. We had no written agreements or anything.
Everything worked out fine, he says, until rent control came along.
I got the tenant from hell.
And that's why he's here. This is the first time Hurley has ever wanted to evict a tenant. But he doesn't think the rent ordinance is on his side. And to him, that's an injustice.
For someone like me who puts so much into a building, these laws that are here now in this city treat me very poorly. And if I had a choice again, knowing that this was going to happen, that I would get stuck with people that I can't remove from a building, I wouldn't have done it.
This idea that you wouldn't want tenants in a city with some of the highest rents in the country is a little hard to believe, which made me think, do other landlords feel this way? I wasn't going to find out here, since no one else would talk to me, so I headed to the Sunset District to speak with Josephine Zhao, one of the most vocal advocates for landlords on that side of town.
So this is one of the bathrooms.
Zhao has a lot in common with Hurley. They both live in the buildings they own, and most of the rent they collect goes right back into them for mortgages and maintenance. But Zhao just got her place in 2008, and since then she's become quite the expert on the rent ordinance.
I'm a volunteer with the Small Property Owners of San Francisco to help the Chinese immigrant small property owners to navigate the complex minefield of San Francisco's property ownership policies.
Complex minefield. Okay, that sounds pretty intense. But to a lot of people who immigrate to San Francisco and buy property here, it's almost inconceivable how many restrictions are placed on them.
They thought this is more communist than the communist China they have been through. When they got here, it's totally upside down. They couldn't believe what situation they got themselves into.
Zhao can relate. She bought a small apartment building to be closer to UCSF Children's Hospital when one of her young daughters needed a kidney transplant. But her tenant smoked, and the smell made her daughter ill.
She got woken up in the middle of the night, coughing, head exploding, and, you know, heart racing.
Zhao felt powerless.
We have to deal with very stringent rent control law that has incredible pressure on us, not just mentally, financially, but, you know, our well-being.
That's the landlord's burden. Small property owners who live amongst their tenants can't just tell them what to do. And there are only a few legal ways to evict them. And she says you don't want to look like the bad guy for kicking out your tenants, even if it is legal. Zhao says activist groups will mark your sidewalk if you evict someone. She shows me photos of properties where this has happened.
Oh, I'm worried. If I do anything, they're going to mark me. But that's okay. If that's the way they want to go for it, then go for it. I'll be a martyr, you know? Come kill me, you know? Come take my property. And then that's going to just make the rest of the city going to be aware of the situation, right? So, like, what kind of treatment are we getting? We're not doing anything that's illegal or profit-driven, you know? We're not evil.
She says if her current tenants leave, she won't re-rent their units. Because Zhao doesn't want to be a landlord in a city that she thinks is unfair to small property owners. In San Francisco, I'm Liz Pfeffer for Cross Currents.
Are you a landlord with something to say about the current state of the housing market? Is renting your unit a good investment? Or are you frustrated by it? We want to hear what you have to say. Give us a call. Our tip line is 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message at 415-264-7106, and we'll try to get your opinion on the air.
This is Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. When you're talking about the housing crisis in San Francisco, you've got to touch on rent control. It's one way for cities to regulate their housing prices, but it's not that common. In fact, only a handful of cities in the United States have it. Among them are New York, Los Angeles, a few cities in the Bay Area, and San Francisco. San Francisco's rent control got its start in the 70s. It was a reaction to sky-high inflation, house flipping, and massive rent increases at the time.
And like I said, there's no limitation on how much your rent can be increased. I had a group of people come in here who were living across town who had 7 rent increases in the past year and a half.
That's from an interview with Nikki Tufano in 1978 from the documentary film Pushed Out for Profit. She helped give legal assistance to tenants. A year after that interview, the Board of Supervisors passed the Rent Stabilization Ordinance, or rent control. Some say rent control is saving the city. Others say it's making the housing crisis worse. But what exactly does rent control mean in San Francisco? KALW's Isabel Angel explains.
Let's start with the most basic foundation of rent control. Which tenants qualify for it? Hint, it's not everyone.
Right, good question, because it's always one of the bigger ones. It's what's rent controlled and what's not.
That's Robert Collins, the deputy director of the San Francisco Rent Board, which enforces the rent control laws in the city.
Rent control generally affects properties that were built prior to the passage of the rent ordinance. So buildings that were built before June 13, 1979, generally are rent controlled.
Key word here, generally. You have to be in an apartment, not a condominium. An apartment is rented out by the landlord of a whole building, while condos are each owned by a different landlord and rented separately. Now, if you do live in a condo or a single-family home, you most likely don't qualify for rent control, unless it was built before 1979 and you moved in before 1996. So now we know who qualifies for rent control, but what is it exactly?
Rent control in San Francisco basically comprises of two parts.
Again, Robert Collins.
There are eviction protections so that a landlord needs to have a just cause to evict a tenant.
There are 15 just causes, to be exact, like Ellis Act evictions. Or if you don't pay your rent on time, or you become a nuisance to other tenants, or someone in your landlord's immediate family wants to move into your unit, then the landlord can evict you. But if the landlord sells a building under rent control and you're living in it, that's not a just cause, and legally, you're safe. Now, for the second part of rent control.
The other side, the big side, is price controls, so that a landlord in San Francisco can raise the rent by the annual allowable increase every year.
That's tied to the Consumer Price Index for the Bay Area, which is a measure of inflation. The rent increase is 60% of that index number.
And what is it for 2014? Do we have that yet?
We do. It's 1%. So the Consumer Price Index was about 1.6%, and 60% of that is 1%.
This is a major difference from rent controls in other cities. In New York and Los Angeles, the city's rent boards have more discretion with yearly increases. They can hike up rents way higher than whatever the inflation rate happens to be. In New York, that's meant higher increases under the business-friendly mayors Rudy Giuliani and Michael Bloomberg. But New York also has something called vacancy control. This is a pretty big deal. Vacancy control puts a cap on how much a landlord can increase an apartment's rent between tenants. It's supposed to protect new tenants in real estate booms. San Francisco doesn't have this. In fact, the city can't under state law. Instead, landlords can raise the rent as high as they want when a new tenant moves in. In 1979, San Francisco was dealing with a housing crisis. The city responded by passing the Rent Control Ordinance, but this was designed to do only one thing: to protect tenants from getting priced out of the places they already lived in. It had nothing to do with keeping overall rents down. In these San Francisco terms, then, rent control is a success. Whether the policy is the best one for new renters, old renters, or landlords, that's another question. For Cross Currents, I'm Isabel Angel.
You probably have an opinion about rent control in your neighborhood, and we want to hear it. You can leave your comments on our Facebook page, we're KALW, or you can just call and leave us a message at 415-264-7106. That number again is 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message and we'll try to get your perspective on the air. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. When a landlord and a tenant are involved in a dispute, an eviction from the property is pretty much the last resort. And when evictions do occur in San Francisco, there are two people who are involved with every single one. They both make up the Eviction Assistance Unit at the Sheriff's Department, but they really don't act like cops. Their job is to visit anybody served an eviction notice and try to connect them to resources. KALW's Nina Gensler Debs takes us through a day in their lives.
We're in the Mission District on a beautiful Monday afternoon, waiting for someone to answer our repeated knocks.
They pulled the dog away. The dog would constantly be barking.
Oh, someone's here.
The voices you're hearing belong to Deputies Joe Criddle and Diego Perez. Today, we're driving around the city, visiting people who have been served an eviction notice.
Is there mom or dad home?
A little boy eventually answers the door, and the two deputies go in while I wait outside. They're in there for at least half an hour. Before I go on, I should note that I wasn't allowed to speak with any of the people getting evicted or reveal where they live. When the deputies get back in the car, both of them look grim.
Her son actually answered the door. She was too sick to get out of bed, so that's why they invited us in. She's basically 34 years old. She was in the hospital when the whole...
Deputy Perez says the woman is frequently in and out of the hospital, and so she had asked someone else to deliver her rent checks. Instead, it sounds like that person cashed a couple of the checks himself. By the time she figured out what was going on, it was too late. Building management had already started the eviction process.
It's pretty bad. The house was immaculate. It was really clean. She looked well taken care of. This is just one of those things that she has no control over.
Best case scenario, the judge will throw out the case and this woman will pay the rent she owes. But she doesn't have a whole lot of time. See, the Eviction Assistance Unit only gets cases after a judge has signed an order for eviction. And once the judge signs an order, the evictee only has 1 week to find somewhere else to go.
We always get the case late because we get it, if we're lucky, 7 days before the eviction.
Deputy Criddle has been walking into situations just like this one for 10 years. He's a tall, middle-aged African-American man with a solid build and friendly. He's constantly smiling and making jokes, so it's easy to feel comfortable around him. While he didn't choose the role, it was assigned to him, Deputy Criddle loves his job, and he thinks he's good at it.
Well, I want to say all deputies have a certain amount of skills. That's part of being a deputy. But to be in eviction assistance, it takes a little bit more than the average deputy. You have to really know how to communicate with people. You have to be familiar with the area. You just have to be able to talk to people.
There are a lot of you have to's on that list, but it seems like it's particularly important to know what resources are available for evictees here in the Bay Area. And that takes a while to figure out. Deputy Perez explains.
Every person you deal with is kind of like a puzzle piece, right? You have to figure out, okay, what underlying issues do they have? Are they being, you know, evicted for what reason? Are they being evicted because they're a nuisance? Or is it basically they lost their job and now they can't make the payment anymore, you know? So once you start referring, knowing what agencies do what and where you can send people, where you can refer people to, once you figure all that out, it's time for you to go.
When he says it's time for you to go, Deputy Perez means he'll be rotated out of the position. That's because he's only assigned to be in the unit part-time and for just a year. Maybe that's why he's a bit more serious than his partner. He has that classic cop buzz cut and takes a more formal approach to his job. Deputy Perez has about 5 months left, and Deputy Criddle is not happy about it. He thinks that there should be a minimum of 2 people doing this job full-time. Today, that's not the only thing he's unhappy about.
Do you think you have enough resources to do your job super well? You are shaking your head. No.
Absolutely not. I mean, first of all, we don't even have an appropriate vehicle. I mean, it's really tough for us to drive around in whatever kind of vehicle we can get our hands on.
Today, we're driving around in a squad car because their usual van broke down, and not for the first time. The squad car is unmarked, but Deputy Criddle says it still draws unwanted attention.
It's potentially very dangerous because when you do eviction assistance, you're there all alone. So you're going into, just think about the shadiest, darkest, dingiest, dirtiest, nasty places. You go in all by yourself. But if we go in a van or an SUV with no markings or anything on it, they don't really know who we are. You know, they think we sell insurance or, you know, something like that, or we're some kind of investigators. They don't necessarily see us as police or a sheriff's department.
So these are cops who don't want to be seen as cops, and they help a wide variety of people. But Deputy Criddle says some need more assistance than others.
There are priorities that we have on our list, and the priorities would include, but are not limited to, seniors, people with children, assaultive people, people who have language barriers, medical problems, mental problems, or foreclosure-related evictions.
Now, just to clarify, the eviction assistance unit can neither prevent evictions from happening nor make them happen. Their only job is to connect people with organizations or programs that could help them find a place to go.
Even the person that's in the worst situation imaginable, when we leave, they tell us thank you because they've had that shoulder to cry on. They've gotten some ideas from us on what they can do to help them relocate. It's just a variety of things that happen in a normal interview that you just couldn't imagine.
Some of the hardest things that have happened to him are difficult to imagine.
We've had a couple of suicides. We've had one senior person that we actually didn't get a chance to see, and she actually set herself on fire. We've had a couple of child takeaways where we actually physically has to take the small child out of their parents' arms to give it to the other parent. So, I mean, pick one. I mean, there's some tough ones, you know, and you got to be kind of like an android. I mean, you know, you can't really show any emotion or anything like that, but it's kind of hard to do sometimes.
Pulling on heartstrings left and right.
Our next stop is a small house in the Bayview. The house belongs to a 74-year-old woman who's losing her home because of multiple foreclosures. The deputy spoke to her son, who lives in the East Bay. He told them that his mom has lived in the house for 43 years, and she didn't really understand what was happening. By the time she told anybody about what was going on, the house had already been sold.
And it's just really rough because they're losing the house that he grew up in, and it's mom's house, you know. Obviously, they don't want to give her a loan modification because the house is worth X amount of dollars.
Both deputies recognize that they get the better end of these conversations, and the tables could easily be turned.
We've had many coworkers that have went through the same process, you know, and it's just, you never know when you can get hurt, never return back to work, and the amount of money you were counting on no longer is the same amount, and now you can't make the payment, and then you become just like one of the other people that we're, paying visits to today.
Whether assisting coworkers or strangers, there are a lot of tough moments in this job. They say the best way to get through the rough spots is to talk it out. And to best help people getting evicted, they have to listen. In San Francisco, I'm Nina Gensler-Depps for Cross Currents.
For more coverage on the Bay Area's housing issues, visit KALW.org and click on CrossCurrents. That's also where you can subscribe to our podcast and tell us what you want us to be covering. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Julie Kane, Jen Cheehan, Jeremy Dalmas, Ryan Miller, Angela Johnston, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Stephen Short, Seth Samuel, Raisu Sussman, Todd Whitney, and Melanie Young. Today's show was produced by Leela Day and engineered by Chris Hoff. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And because of your support, we can proudly say that we are listener-supported, independent, local public radio. Is called Nesta. They're a reggae band from Half Moon Bay. While Bob Marley is their main influence, the band primarily plays original compositions. Nesta will be performing Sunday afternoon at the Surf Spot in Pacifica. Music starts about 1 p.m. All of that information, along with more local music and more local stories, is at KALW.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.